Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly to discuss the personal politics of health. We're living in a highly advantaged country where many have unprecedented access to time-saving products. Fast cars, fast electronics, wireless phones that take pictures and play music, fast food. The food is so fast that you can even pop into a convenience store, buy something, and heat it in a microwave right there. Fast! And what is all this convenience buying us, besides speed? Well, anxiety, panic attacks, rage, and increasing rates of depression and other psychiatric diagnoses. Attention deficit disorder, well, duh! So what does all this have to do with food? Everything. Nutrient deficiencies cause symptoms that are never caught by conventional medicine as causing psychiatric symptoms, but the brave researchers who have studied them see remarkable differences in behavior, mood, and even ID when people get off junk foods and take even a daily multiple vitamin. Now, don't you think that's a better solution than a bottle of pills that are causing additional symptoms to the ones you're starting to take them for? I'll say. Stay tuned to hear more about food and mood with today's guest, Jack Challum. A brief announcement before we continue. Dr. Fawcett and I will be doing a two-hour event in Berkeley on Sunday, March 4th, from 4:30 to 6:30, called Protect Yourself from Stress-Related Illness. To find out more, go to our website or call 707-874-2772, the website Your Own Health and Fitness. This will be Sunday, March 4th from 4:30 to 6:30 in Berkeley. Let's get into our topic for today, food and mood, with Jack Challum. Jack Challum, known as the Nutrition Reporter, is one of America's most trusted nutrition and health writers. He is the author of more than 20 books, including The Food Mood Solution, Feed Your Genes Right, The Inflammation Syndrome, and lead author of the best-selling Syndrome X, The Complete Nutritional Program to Prevent and Reverse Insulin Resistance. Jack is also the series editor for a 50-volume user guide series of health paperback books. He writes the Nutrition Reporter newsletter and contributes regularly to many magazines. And we're happy to have you back on the air, Jack Challum.
Lena, it's good to be back.
So you have come up with an interesting phrase to describe the types of mood-changing nutrients that people are missing. Can you explain the phrase? Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Neuronutrients?
Yes.
Yes. It really all begins with the idea that the physical and biochemical basis of our bodies goes back to nutrition. It doesn't come out of thin air. And even our genes depend on nutrients for normal functioning, repair, and regulation. So when you recognize that, it is not a big jump to realize that our neurotransmitters, the chemicals that regulate our moods, also depend on nutrients. And in a nutshell, most of these nutrients really come from two sources. One is protein, more specifically the amino acids that make up protein, and vitamins. And if you take a substance such as serotonin, which many people regard as the feel-good neurotransmitter and one that's the supposed target of antidepressant drugs, this is built almost entirely on the amino acid tryptophan, which is found in all types of animal protein products, and it's converted to serotonin by way of the action of mostly vitamins, a couple of minerals. And it's the same with all of our other neurotransmitters, the ones that bring us up, the ones that bring us down, the ones that make us sharp, the ones that make us sleepy. It sounds a little bit like one pill makes you smaller and one pill makes you larger. And in a sense, that's part of what I'm actually saying in the book. It is possible to manipulate these substances through diet and supplements. And maybe even a better word than manipulate is to correct the imbalances that are caused by a typical diet of fast foods and junk foods.
Or even just processed foods. It doesn't even have to be junk foods, you know. It's interesting that people can go to a health food store and buy highly processed foods. And as long as they say organic, people sort of buy into the idea that they're perfectly good to eat and that they'll supply the kinds of nutrients that they need. And instead, they're really still empty calories. So you're saying two things here that are very important. You're saying that, using serotonin as an example, although, of course, you and I both know reading the research that serotonin, when you talk to people who really know this stuff, like Peter Bragan, who's a psychiatrist who's been fighting with the psychiatric medication industry for years in the courts, has said that you can't identify for sure that serotonin is doing what it's doing because there are so many receptors all over the body and there's so many nuanced pathways and ways that this works. But to use that as a blunt instrument to make a point, since people have heard that, serotonin, in fact, is made from amino acids, which are the building blocks of protein. So one thing that you're saying is that there are a number of reasons why people will be deficient in feel-good chemicals in their brains. And part of it is because they'll be missing the raw materials to make them. And one mistake that people make is to not eat good quality, healthfully raised, organically raised, or grown foods that are rich in protein so they get the building blocks and making sure that they get enough complete proteins. The other interesting thing is what you discuss in the book as the stress effects on these neuronutrients, which is another way of saying neurotransmitters, which are nutrients that connect up with our brain. You know, they're cell communicators, as hormones are. So the other thing is the stress effect, which is a kind of round robin, because you're stressed out, so you eat comfort foods, and then the comfort foods give you maybe an immediate lowering of cortisol from the sugar, but then, which is a stress hormone, but then the long-term effect, the downstream effect, is terrible. So why don't you talk about the stress effects on neuronutrients?
Well, the picture is really a collision between stress and poor nutrition. And the first thing that happens when we're stressed, you, me, our listeners, is our eating habits go out the window. And most typically, we'll delay meals, we'll skip meals, and then when we finally eat, we're over hungry. And we often succumb to whatever is the quick fix. And that's typically some sort of high sugar, high refined carbohydrate junk food. And more I refer to these refined carbohydrates as being sugar-like carbohydrates, because when they hit the bloodstream, the effect is very similar to that of pure sugar. When we're stressed, we stop eating sensibly, even when we have the best of intentions. And we succumb to foods that do not provide many of these neuronutrients. Fast foods tend to be low in protein, high in sugars, carbs, bad fats. They're low in vitamins and minerals. In essence, they don't provide the building blocks we need. Now, something else is going on also, and that is when we're eating more of these sugary and sugar-like carbs, our blood sugar is fluctuating. And often, particularly in people who tend to have mood swings, these sort of Jekyll and Hyde personalities, a lot of terms to describe this, mercurial, it is another one of these terms. And we all know people like this. Their moods often track with their blood sugar levels, and they're usually in a fairly good mood after they eat, but as soon as their blood sugar starts to go down, they get grumpy, irritable. They're not nice to be around. So some of these people become downright mean, physically aggressive. And when our blood sugar drops, one of the changes in the brain is that more primitive brain centers start to play a more dominant role. And these brain centers tilt us more toward aggression, which, you know, in the past was a good survival trait, because if we were aggressive, we could hunt, we could attack.
You could knock an elephant off a carcass.
Yeah, exactly. And but you know, in the office, on the freeway, I mean, this type of behavior.
Yeah, you should pretty much leave those elephants alone when you find them in the office. Another point to make here is that under stress, you're producing hormones, and the hormones are cortisol, adrenaline, obviously, cortisol, and then insulin, because cortisol moves energy around your body to make you ready to fight or flight, to knock that elephant off your carcass or off your computer, or it also produces insulin, and insulin is responsible. Both of these things are life-giving. You can't exist with either of them. It isn't the case that you should not have cortisol or insulin. You should have them, and you need them. The problem is that if you're in a chronic stress state, that these hormones stay very high, and they have an impact on your other hormones. So insulin, although it's very important for moving sugar molecules and transporting them where they need to go, insulin tends to get too high when your blood sugar levels persist in being too high, and that's what causes those blood sugar drops, because insulin will, as it's moving sugar around, will cause the blood sugar in your experience of it to feel low, and then you feel hungry again. So you get this sort of hypoglycemic sort of up and down, which is actually a signal that you're starting to move into a metabolic disruption. But the other problem is that insulin as a hormone contests and lowers balancing sex hormones that can cause a calming effect. Like in women, too much insulin will block the production of progesterone in the ovaries and contribute to polycystic ovary syndrome. In men, high cortisol and high insulin will also block and lower testosterone levels, which is calming for men, not doesn't make you more aggressive. It makes you calmer. So when the sex hormones are disrupted and out of balance because of food choices and because these hormones get too high, the stress effect is essentially to lower your neurotransmitters, since your hormones are neurotransmitters, and then the food too. So you end up in a horrible snowball rolling down this thing toward you know where.
Yeah, these are all very good points. Cortisol and insulin also promote the accumulation of what I call belly fat, abdominal obesity. Mm-hmm. And this is a major step in the direction of prediabetes. Mm-hmm. And when you start going down that path, you're basically committing your body to these abnormal blood sugar levels and blood sugar swings. And it becomes a process that you have to consciously try to reverse. It's not going to reverse by itself. Rather, it tends to just feed on itself and just get worse and worse. And, you know, as I've gone more and more into this, I really think this whole issue of prediabetes is essentially ground zero in most chronic modern health problems.
Well, I would posit that metabolic disruption is not a disease, but it is a stress effect, because blood sugars go up under stress because you're mobilizing sugar molecules to get yourself out of trouble. So it's a normal stress response. So people experiencing high blood sugars, along with bad food choices, which contributes to high blood sugars, you also have just stress, and you can't take one out of the other. It's all combined. What's important here also, let me just say, this is your own health and fitness. I'm Lena Berman on the phone with nutrition reporter Jack Challem, Challem. We're talking about his book, The Food Mood Solution, The Food Mood Solution today. So what we're saying is that there are building blocks of there are neurotransmitters in our food. They're in protein. And some of them are calming and some of them are stimulating. So part of the trick of eating to help your mood is doing a little bit of a diagnostic on yourself to figure out which direction you need to go in, and then knowing which of these nutrients you might, just by your symptoms, be low in. So why don't you give us some examples of the calming neurotransmitters?
Two of my favorites are GABA, which stands for gamma-aminobutyric acid, and L-theanine. GABA is actually a neurotransmitter, and it plays a number of roles in the brain, and the end result is that it has a calming effect. It basically helps the brain filter out background static, the sort of stuff that distracts the brain from whatever it's primarily focusing on. And I have to point out that it's not all biochemical. There's this interaction between biochemistry / nutrition and the things we do. And some of the things we do, such as multitasking, stress some of these neurotransmitters, literally burning them up faster than they would be burned up otherwise. GABA supplements are available at natural food stores. They really do have a great calming effect. And GABA is simply an amino acid. It's another protein building block. L-theanine is another amino acid. This is found in green tea and is the most predominant amino acid in green tea. It accounts for the taste of green tea. And the higher grades of green tea actually have higher theanine levels. The poorer grades have lower theanine levels. When you get into the higher grades, there's enough L-theanine to actually counteract the effect of the caffeine. So this is one of the reasons why green tea relaxes instead of making people edgy. L-theanine boosts GABA levels in the brain, so it seems to work in that pathway, and I suspect in ways that just have not been discovered yet. Other important nutrients, what I always recommend is a high-potency multivitamin or a high-potency B complex.
Yeah.
And you'll find the high-potency Bs in a high-potency multi. And so many of the Bs play roles in the production of neurotransmitters.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
Is how does that work? It also promotes energy, B vitamins.
Exactly. And in a sense, the folklore with the B vitamins goes back to the 1930s and 40s when people first started to describe them as anti-stress vitamins. And what we now know is they play essential roles in converting amino acids to neurotransmitters. And again, serotonin is one example, but it's far from the only one. You need B vitamins to properly use protein to make neurotransmitters. And then protein itself,
has them. But you know what I want to get back to is the I wanted to just talk about these different neurotransmitters. And what you're saying is theanine and GABA are both neurotransmitters that communicate with our cells to help us calm ourselves. I might point out that GABA, one of the reasons synthetic forms of progesterone, which is what Provera and birth control pills have in them, cause symptoms for women, is because bioidentical progesterone, the stuff that matches our molecular structure, hooks into the GABA receptors in our brains, and it causes a calming effect. So since estrogen is excitatory, progesterone counters that. So women who are low in progesterone will be shaking their feet and jerking and stuff in their sleep and coming up with all kinds of other symptoms. Theanine also, you mentioned, which I didn't realize, is in black tea as well. So one of the reasons for using tea as a stimulant, and if you're going to drink a stimulant in the morning and not to abuse stimulants when you're tired, because obviously that's going to cause a stress effect, but that if you use tea instead of coffee, you have this sort of balancing effect with it. Some stimulating neurotransmitters that people are sometimes deficient in are what now, Jack?
Dopamine. Dopamine is essentially the neurotransmitter that creates the shopper's high, that makes us feel great about sex. Dopamine is also the target of drugs like cocaine and meth. And in a sense, when people take these drugs, they're only partially addicted to the drug. They become addicted to essentially a super dopamine effect that's maintained by these drugs. Epinephrine, also known as adrenaline, norepinephrine, also known as noradrenaline, are among the stimulating neurotransmitters. Acetylcholine is, although acetylcholine is also essential for memory. And all of these neurotransmitters play important roles. The key is keeping them in relative balance. And when they're in relative balance, we can respond appropriately to whatever situation we happen to be in. And one of the definitions I give in the book of, you know, what really defines a bad mood, in my mind, it's a mood that's totally inappropriate to the situation. It's being glum when you should be in a good mood. It's being sort of laid back instead of being irritable.
Or just being responsive.
Exactly.
But there are lots of things that play into, I mean, there are emotional reasons for people to have low neurotransmitters. I mean, the stress effects also, along with nutrient effects. But one thing that's interesting about the stimulating neurotransmitters is norepinephrine, for instance, can't be made in the body without sufficient B12 and folic acid. So that track or that pathway is again, a nutrient pathway. And some of the other stimulating amino acids are found, you know, the way that, let's put it another way, Candace Pert, who studied about receptors in the brain, said in an interview I did with her a million years ago, at least, that one of the things that's interesting is if you have a receptor for something, it means that your body can make that substance in your own body. So as long as you give the body the raw materials to make that chemical or that neurotransmitter, your body has the receptors for it because it can make it. So if you know that all the feel-good chemicals that you can take exogenously as a drug or whatever can be made in your body, it gives you a different feeling about making sure that your diet and your stress levels are appropriate so that you give your body a chance to make them.
Yeah, it all comes back to providing the appropriate building blocks for our neurotransmitters. they all come from the food we eat or the supplements we take.
Now, here's an interesting one that will perk people's brain up here a little bit. We have the world awash in Viagra right now, and Viagra is basically playing off of a neurotransmitter deficiency. You talk about this in the book. Nitric oxide, not to be confused with laughing gas, is another substance that you can produce in the body without Viagra, which increases circulation, blood circulation, which is why it increases blood circulation to the southern regions. And it's made from arginine and other things. It's nitric oxide that's increased. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, these are two of my favorite molecules.
I guess so, yeah.
So to speak. nitric oxide was called the molecule of the year back in 1992 by Science, the journal Science. And in 1998, three researchers got the Nobel Prize in Medicine for their research on what nitric oxide does. It's a major neurotransmitter and just an all-round regulatory molecule. It plays a key role in regulating what our cardiovascular system does. And nitric oxide comes from only one source, and that is arginine, an amino acid.
Well, you can get it from the herb ashwagandha. Will help you produce it as well.
Okay, but that's probably because the herb is high in arginine.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And what you're sort of leading to is this whole issue with erectile dysfunction, and part of this is cardiovascular, in that the body converts arginine to nitric oxide, which improves blood vessel tone throughout the body. One way to look at this is it's not just the heart that pumps blood through the body. It's sort of a subtle undulation of the blood vessels. And this undulation, this sort of give and take, really depends on the presence of arginine and nitric oxide. Well, the same thing happens in men. And when this process goes wrong, erectile dysfunction is one of the consequences. Arginine basically helps the whole process go right. And drugs like Viagra are essentially targeting the same process in the body. And it's also why Viagra seems to have some cardiovascular benefits.
And problems, too. It's also causing
problems,
heart attacks.
Yeah,
because you as soon as you purify and standardize and remove an active ingredient, you can sometimes cause problems because there are balancing effects in the pure form or natural form of foods and substances. Arginine is enhanced by ornithine. So if you take arginine and ornithine together, you can take less arginine. And my guess is that ashwagandha somehow interacts with the pathways that you use to utilize arginine. There's something very important I want to say here, though. All of the cell communication, which is what we're talking about with neurotransmitters, and neurotransmitters are hormones also, is you have to have sufficient cholesterol levels. So this new sort of movement toward lowering cholesterol way lower than what for years we've known is normal for sort of middle-aged people tend to have a cholesterol level of 250, but now they're being lowered to way below 200. And I've seen people in my office, in my practice, with cholesterol levels that are dangerously low. People's health is challenged when cholesterol gets too low. And one of the ways it's challenged is that you cannot make your hormones, including cortisol and DHEA and all your sex hormones. And so you can forget about your nitric oxide and all the rest of it. Another thing that I think we should mention real quick is missed diagnoses, which cause mood problems that are related to food, which is food allergies and cerebral allergies. Can you give us a bit about that?
Yeah, this is a fascinating area, and some of the research goes back 30 or 40 years, and it's frustrating to see that it's still not part of any kind of mainstream medicine. There does seem to be a cerebral or brain effect of food allergies, sometimes chemical allergies as well. And one way to look at this is if you have some sort of dermatological reaction to an allergen, you're going to have kind of a dilation, leakage through the blood vessels, inflammation, irritation, and if the same thing happens in the brain, and this has been documented, it can affect behavior in myriad ways.
Yeah, there's also cerebral swelling that occurs when people have an inhalant allergy effect or a chemical allergy effect.
Yeah, and these changes really just start a cascade of other changes. Sometimes they lead to the secretion of more pro-inflammatory cytokines. So in a sense, they have a life of their own. And, the effect tends to be very individualized.
And one thing
that is important to keep in mind, that there are several top allergens. Wheat and dairy are really
yes.
the top two.
Yes.
But people can be sensitive to any food,
yes.
Whether it's a good food or a junk food.
So brain fog and cravings are good flags. And also, before we go to a quick break, low thyroid is a missed diagnosis. It's another hormone balance issue that causes terrible mood problems, and it's so missed, and you mentioned that in your book. We're going to need to take a brief musical break. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm on the phone today with Jack Challum, the nutrition reporter. His latest book is The Food Mood Solution, and we're going to come back to that interview in just a moment after this brief break. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman. I'm on the phone today with nutrition reporter Jack Challum, author of The Food Mood Solution. If you missed parts of today's show, you can go to our website and listen to it all week at yourownhealthandfitness.org, where you'll also find information on the Progressive Health Observer and Radio on Demand, where you can download archives and articles. Or you can call us at 707-874-2772. And remember, Dr. Fawcett and I will be doing a two-hour event in Berkeley on Sunday, March 4th. From 4:30 to 6:30, called Protect Yourself from Stress-Related Illness. To find out more, again, go to our website or call us at 707-874-2772. Before we continue with our interview with Jack Challum about food and mood, a brief editorial about this week's health news by Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett.
Thank you, Lena. Fast food restaurants have taken a beating for decades. Even tons of advertising and promised changes in response to critics haven't helped much. Witness the success of the documentary Supersize Me and the book and now movie Fast Food Nation. And yet, business is brisk. As reported in a recent issue of New Scientist, a researcher in Sweden is looking into the effects of a fast food diet, more or less a Supersize Me clinical study. The article seemed to take glee in the results so far. Some people gained weight, but others didn't, even on 6,000 calories per day. None of the study's results have been published, so all we have is the New Scientist interview with the researcher, Fredrik Norström, and two of the study's participants. However, it's obvious that the center of gravity for this work is the much-dreaded obesity epidemic. You've no doubt heard of this, or even been caught in its clutches, the panic arising from the theory that excess body weight is a disease that causes all sorts of bad things like diabetes and heart attacks and liver change and on and on. It's nonsense, of course. Excess body weight isn't a disease, it's a symptom. It's your body talking to you, telling you that something isn't working right. The fact that the New Scientist article appears in the absence of any published results makes me suspicious. It seems more like an opportunity to thumb a journalistic nose at the popular nemesis of junk food. Nevertheless, some of the bits of information doled out are interesting. What participants noticed most was not the weight they did or did not gain, but that they were never hungry. They missed it. They also missed being physically active, since the study required participants to minimize their exercise. What caught my attention most was that the two participants interviewed for the article reported that their bodies didn't feel right. The young man who gained virtually no weight on 6,600 calories per day said, quote, "I felt disgusting," end quote. He also reported that walking had become a major chore. The young woman, who did gain weight on 5,000 calories per day, said psychologically, quote, "I feel very, very good, but the physical part is bad," end quote. It's clear to me that the direction of this research is to find out how to identify people who can stay thin from people who cannot. No doubt there will be some genetic tests and tests for protein markers that will sort out who's who. At the same time, pharmaceuticals will be developed that will coax a body prone to weight gain into acting more like a thin body. What does this research tell you about how to take care of yourself? Each of us has a unique biology. Each person's biology responds in a unique way to fast food as well as to food generally, physical activity, and exposures to toxins, allergens, and stress. If you feel bad, your unique biology is trying to protect you. It's saying, stop. It's saying, give me what I need. The study participants challenged their unique biology so much that it was screaming at them. The experiment became a kind of aversion therapy. What if you can't hear what your unique biology is telling you? That's what the science of fast food is all about. It's food designed to be desirable, even addictive, although that word is not used in polite company. Isn't addiction a kind of feeling bad? Okay, so fast food is an easy target. What about other foods you can't live without, or physical activity, or toxins, or allergens, or stress and their effect on you? What if you're so used to feeling bad that you accept it as normal? Listen. Your body is talking to you. For a copy of this editorial, go to our website, Your Own Health and Fitness, and go to the blog. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Jeff Fawcett is an environmental economist, writer, and health educator who works with me on the show and also works with individuals. You can reach him through our website. Now back to our interview with Jack Chalom about food and mood. One of the things that's really interesting is that there is an enormous amount of research that has been done on changing the incidence of violent behavior and in even increasing IQ with the introduction of very small changes, like just adding a high-potency one-a-day vitamin and getting rid of junk food. And I'm thinking here of Stephen Schoenthaler, who's a sociologist. You refer to a number of researchers. Why don't you say something about what researchers have found?
Well, Schoenthaler has done a number of studies over the years, some of them just improving the quality of food in prisons and juvenile halls, others giving basically a very low-potency over-the-counter multivitamin to incarcerated prisoners. And what happens is the rate of violent acts inside the prison, which most people really aren't aware of, but if you put violent criminals together, they're going to be violent. And their behavior improves when their nutrition improves. And when I talked with Schoenthaler a few years back, he said basically these vitamins are just, you know, they help brain cells connect with each other. Other people, Bernard Gesch at Oxford University, Bill Walsh at the Pfeiffer Treatment Center in the Chicago area, have done similar work. Walsh is scientific director of the Pfeiffer Treatment Center, and their approach is to really do a battery of tests on their patients and then individualize the supplement program to correct whatever happens to be wrong with that person. And in contrast, Schoenthaler and Gesch have tended to use more of a one-size-fits-all approach, but with these remarkable benefits where there are these incredible improvements in prison. And one of the points I make in the food mood solution is if better nutrition can help people who are violent criminals, my gosh, what can it do for the rest of us? And just eating a little more protein, and you don't have to go on an Atkins diet or anything like that. But
there's nothing wrong with his diet either.
Yeah, exactly. But just adding a little more protein
and eating whole foods, not eating processed foods.
Exactly.
Taking your B vitamins and fish oils and whatnot, which we'll get into in a moment about that.
And a lot of this comes down to fresh versus packaged foods. But protein, high fiber, veggies, both help stabilize blood sugar, and that is such a key step in this whole process. And they're also protein and high fiber veggies, nutrient dense foods, so you're going to get a lot of what your brain and body needs. We were talking a few minutes ago about some of the effects of drugs, and I'd like to come back to that.
Yeah, let me just quickly ID the show, and then we'll come back to that. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. We're on the phone today with author of The Food Mood Solution, Jack Chalom, C-H-A-L-E-M. He is the nutrition reporter. The website for this book is thefoodmoodsolution.com. foodmoodsolution.com, and we'll get back to our interview just now.
Lena, one of the effects, as you know, with drugs is they work usually by throwing a wrench into the whole process, the biochemical process in the body. And sometimes they work by creating a bottleneck. In the cases of Viagra and Prozac, which we were alluding to, they basically work to try to preserve higher levels of arginine in the case of Viagra, or serotonin in the case of Prozac. But it's far more direct, far simpler, far less expensive to simply raise levels of the chemical substrates involved in these biochemical processes. Arginine, as we mentioned, for erectile dysfunction, tryptophan, or 5-HTP5-hydroxytryptophan, for depression and anxiety. And I've talked with counselors about this, and they point out that they always tell their patients, even when they take medications, the medications will work better when they're eating more protein. Protein provides the substrates, the arginine, the tryptophan, that make these processes work. And when you do things right between diet and supplements, most of the time you don't even need any medications.
Yeah, I think that that's true. There are also very famous researchers and healthcare practitioners, physicians who have been treating patients for, gosh, since the 50s with nutrients instead of drugs, and the effects are far more amazing. They're far more astounding, like Abram Hoffer, who I interviewed so many years ago, who's still working, I think, in it. Maybe he's just now retired from the Ortho Molecular Health Medicine Group, treating patients with niacin B3, niacin, which is also very good for the heart. And it may be that he, without knowing this, without testing people for it, because now we're getting more sensitive with testing, actually found people who had some disruption in the pathways to use niacin, or had some kind of clotting factor in their family line that predisposed them to having low niacin. But niacin really helped. And then the omega-3 fish oils, even conventional medicine and their journals are recognizing. The thing to remember with all of this is that nutrients are dose dependent, and I've read and heard from people who have talked about using omega-3s for psychiatric symptoms that for them 9,000 milligram capsules worked, 9 a day, 3 with each meal, and if they took 7 it didn't work. So it had to be a particular amount. So people are different in terms of how much they need. You know, an often missed nutrient that's very important for mood is vitamin C.
Yes, and there was a study done close to 10 years ago in which the researchers were trying to look at what are the symptoms of vitamin C deprivation, and they were expecting in a contemporary study to find scurvy. Well, they were never able to induce scurvy, but what they reported was that the first two symptoms of vitamin C deprivation were irritability and fatigue. And these are two of the most common symptoms people have. And they're just irritable all the time, and comes out in different forms, impatience and just having a short fuse. And they're tired all the time. And vitamin C levels in the brain, according to one report, are about 25 to 30 times higher than they are in the bloodstream.
It's amazing.
Which would strongly suggest that it plays a very important role in the brain. You mentioned the omega-3 fish oils, and my sort of general recommendation in the book is start with this high-potency B complex, and most of the time after that, I recommend that people take omega-3 fish oils. And they also have a calming effect. They have an antidepressant effect, an anti-anxiety effect. And that's just dealing with mood. They benefit the cardiovascular system. And I know it's a lot of trouble for people to come to grips with the fact that there are many good fats. Because of this whole fat phobia that has been instilled over the last 20 or 30 years. and eating a couple of fish meals a week, taking it, as you suggest, omega-3 fish oil supplements, have profound benefits to both body and mind.
Yeah, and one thing to keep in mind about the omega-3 fish oils, and that's the reason we're using that as an example of omega-3s instead of flaxseed, is that if you're not a strict vegan and you feel comfortable taking the omega-3 fish oils, you're going to get the long-chain omega-3 oils already converted and ready to use. Your body doesn't have to take a step to convert them. And it's that step that people have to take when they take flax or hemp or one of the other oils to convert this to the long-chain omega-3s that diabetics and, honestly, vegans can't do, because you need some arachidonic acid from protein, animal protein, to do. Now, vegetarians can do it from flaxseed as long as they're having a little bit of dairy and some eggs and a little cheese here and there. But it's hard for vegans. There is a solution. It's a little pricey, but there's a product called NeuroMins, which is made from sea vegetables, which is another good source of long-chain omega-3 fats. But diabetes and vegans and, I might add, cats can't convert flaxseed oil and those other oils into the long-chain omega-3s.
Let me add to that a very important point, and this is research that goes back to 1982, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Trans fats basically screw up this whole conversion.
Right.
Of the omega-3 fats. And anyone who eats French fries, even on occasion, really risks disabling this whole process. Smoking, alcohol also disable it as well, but nothing to the same extent as trans fats.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying to note that what the restaurants are using now instead of trans fats is they're starting to use soy oil, which is very high in omega-6 fats and is very delicate and is damaged by frying. It's really a shame that they're not comfortable using coconut oil, which is stable when it's heated, because it's a saturated fat, or lard, which everybody goes, oh my God, lard. But lard is what they used to use, and lard, tallow from pork fat, is very high in monounsaturated fats. It actually has a good ratio of fat. So, and it's, again, stable when it's fried. It doesn't get destroyed, so oils get destroyed. And the omega-3s, in fact, when you're taking high doses of them, you have to be sure that you're taking at least 400, maybe even 800 units of vitamin E, and all your other antioxidants, all your multivitamin, always with all of these things, and your vitamin C, because the omega-3 fats are also very delicate, and they can be damaged in the warm temperature of your body. So they need to be stabilized with the addition of your other antioxidants. So it's important to remember that you need to take all these vitamins again and eat good foods too, you know, not just vitamins, foods too. And when people ask me, well, shouldn't I take a mixture of omega-3, 6s, and 9s? The answer is no, not so much, because the 3s are very hard to get unless you're eating fish. And you'd have to eat so much fish if you really need those omega-3s, if you have a depressive effect or if you have a circulatory effect and you really need, or even if you need a mild immunosuppressant effect, if you have autoimmune disease of some sort, you need those fish oils. And you don't so much need the others because they're in food. The 9s are in meat. The 6s are very prevalent in seeds and nuts and grains. So if you do eat grains, you're getting plenty. And if you eat any nuts or seeds, you're getting plenty as well. That isn't to say that adding some gamma-linic acid for someone with hormone imbalances or achiness, so if they want a little tiny bit of primrose oil or something, that's okay. But in general, fats work in kind of a balancing act with each other, and that's just like the vitamins. You know, we've been talking about the B vitamins, and we've said this before, we might as well say it again, that all of these, you know, the B vitamins, the B6, the B12, and the folic acid are all important to keep the detox pathways working. And along the way on the deep detox pathway, one of the products that's made is SAMI, which is a wonderful antidepressant.
Yeah, and to make it, you need the B vitamins.
Exactly.
Which is why over and over again in the book, I keep coming back to the B vitamins.
Yeah.
They just play such fundamental roles in our moods and the rest of our health. One of the things I tackle in the book, and this was partly frustration with other food mood books that basically were just saying, well, take this pill or take that pill, kind of a natural pill versus a synthetic pill. And that's what I call the nutrisocial factors that affect how we eat. And what we eat doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's influenced by our upbringing, peer pressure, advertising, many, many other factors. And part of the book basically works on buffering our defenses, in a sense, insulating ourselves from all of these social forces that push us toward eating junk food. And it's an important step in getting us on the right track. It's more than just eating right and taking supplements. It's recognizing that there are commercial interests that are applying a lot of pressure to get us to eat burgers and fries and too much caffeine.
And there's again health food products that are highly processed products that say organic, but then are in fact processed foods that are
exactly.
also depleted. You're listening to Jack Challam again, Challem, author of The Food Mood Solution. His website, thefoodmoodsolution.com. You also talk about another often ignored. Well, I should mention also that this whole business of the detox pathways working with the B vitamins needs glycine, G-L-Y-C-I-N-E, glycine, not lysine. And you talk about the dimethylglycine, there's trimethylglycine, there's just glycine, too. This is all getting complicated stuff about methyl groups here, but it all has to do with the detox pathways. And it turns out that you can make SAMe if your B12 supplement is either methyl or hydroxy, probably methyl B12, methylcobalamin, not cyanocobalamin. Cyanocobalamin is very inexpensive, and it's a cyanide product. Methylcobalamin with glycine will help you make SAMe. So you can do this in your body. You can make these things. You know, we talked briefly about thyroid, and you talked again about tyrosine, which is an amino acid, T-Y-R-O-S-I-N-E, tyrosine. Not good for someone with a thyroid disease, but if you just have a sluggish thyroid, tyrosine helps to potentiate the uptake of iodine into your thyroid. Incidentally, don't take too much iodine. The right amount of iodine, good. Too much iodine, not so good. Talk about tyrosine.
Yeah, tyrosine is sort of a natural upper, and it certainly has no effects that are like any kind of drug that's an upper. But a lot of people just have occasional down days, and this is one of the things I address in the book. And kind of like the quick and dirty way to deal with it if you need to be up that day because of work or some other activity, a little bit of tyrosine and a little bit of vitamin B12 will start to boost some of the more neurotransmitters like dopamine that basically are natural uppers. And one of the other things, and this is more on the psychosocial side of the book, is having these down days are not bad in themselves, as long as they don't occur too frequently. And I have these days, you know, once, twice, maybe three times a year, and what I've learned is don't fight it. Use it as a more contemplative time.
Thank you, yes.
And I find that, at least in my case, it's kind of like my body tapping on the brakes. And these days typically hit when I've been pushing too hard for too long against deadlines. And again, it's important to pay attention to the signals we get from our bodies. And a lot of people don't do that. They keep pushing even though they're tired, they're worn out, they're irritable. And they think taking 1 or 2 weeks vacation is going to center them again. And you can't go through life thinking, you know, 2 weeks a year will center me. You need to develop other techniques you need to use good nutrition to help center yourself. And I go into all of these things in the book.
And you also talk about physical activity, which is really not a food mood solution, but it's a known mood solution. Even a walk around the block will change your mood.
Exactly. So. And physical activity for years has been known to lift depression and anxiety. I started cycling about 3 years ago, and I started to do it just because I needed to do physical activity. But I also find it's a great time to just clear my head. And it's much better than just zoning out in front of the TV. And when I'm cycling and clearing my head, in a sense, I'm making room for new insights and new ideas. I always cycle with a pen and paper in my pocket.
Hope you don't cycle in traffic. We have to let you go, regretfully. What a great interview, doctor. Sorry, you are like a doctor. Jack Challam, nutrition reporter, Jack Challam, C-H-A-L-L-E-M. His book, The Food Mood Solution. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Wayne, the pleasure is mine.
Again, it's thefoodmoodsolution.com for more information about Jack Challam. Again, remember, Dr. Fawcett and I will be doing a two-hour event in Berkeley on Sunday, March 4th from 4:30 to 6:30 called Protect Yourself from Stress-Related Illness. To find out more, go to our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, or call 707-874-2772. And I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Lena Berman. If you need more information or you want a CD copy of this or any other in the series Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours a day at 707-874-2772 for a list of other available shows, information about guests, the Progressive Health Observer, and Radio on Demand, where you can download archives and articles. Go to the website yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is a joint production of Your Own Health and Fitness and KPFA-FM. The engineer for Your Own Health and Fitness today is Michael Yoshida. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.